meeting of the Scrutiny Commission for the Charm of Borough, there are a number of things I would like to remind people of before we start on items from the agenda. Please note that this meeting is being recorded, and the recording will be made available on the Council's website following this meeting. Under the openness of local government bodies regulation, people may film or record this meeting, and this is outside of the Council's control. However, people wishing to film or record the meeting in the meeting should do so in a way that it doesn't disturb or disrupt the business of the meeting. Also, so that the meeting is not disturbed, I would ask that everybody presents present here, turn their mobile off or switch them to silent to ensure that your environment is distraction-free. Thank you. Apologies, please.
Chair, we've had apologies from Councillor Ranson and we've got Councillor Charles to substitute.
Thank you very much. Minutes from the previous meeting, 15th of November 2021. Am I all right to sign off these minutes? Could you show your approval by raising your hands, please? Thank you very much. Right, the minutes have been approved for 15th of November 2021. Disclosures of pecuniary interest, everybody? I don't know of anything, anybody here? No, thank you very much. Declarations of party whip, there are none to report. Questions on the Scrutiny Committee procedure, 11.16. There's no questions submitted. Item 6, commercialisation scrutiny panel update. Justin, welcome. If you would like to update us on this report, I would be very grateful. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. The report sets out an update from when the commercialisation scrutiny panel met pre-COVID times now. I suppose in the world we've moved on quite significantly since then. So the explanations are fairly short and sweet to that. I'm happy to take any questions on the report to that nature, but effectively sets out where we're at with what we've done. The major focus, it should be noted, of the recommendations previously was around the acquisition of investment properties. I will note for the committee that that activity has now ceased, it is complete. The capital strategy has been updated to reflect that we will no longer be doing that. Our access to PWLB has been secured as a result of that. But obviously, in terms of evaluation of options, we are undergoing a significant amount of transformation work as a council at the moment. Heads of service are providing the senior leadership team what we call options for change. But basically, it's a structured template that allows the head of service to go ahead and put forward an idea, ask some key set of questions, considerations, which SLT then collate into a particular piece, filter out the thought, come up with the best ideas, and then take that forward to the appropriate governance process. So it is a controlled fashion. There is a kind of Wild West approach to these items, but they will all be considered. Are there any questions?
Cool. Can you expand on what you said, options for change?
Sure, Councillor Parker. The options for change is essentially, the context and preface is to say that given the financial challenges that Charm and Borough Council faces, we're looking for ways to either generate income or save money. And we call this the options for change. And that's essentially a formal way of formalizing a potential change, whether that be a service reduction or a service increase, increase in income. But it guides a head of service who's completing that through essentially a decision-making process in terms of being able to articulate what the size of savings are, what the income is, strengths and weaknesses of that opportunity. And effectively, that's the template that then comes into SLT as a whole. And we look at all these in a big bucket and determine what action is forward in the business. Does that answer the question?
I don't know if the previous committee we've looked at the commercialisation strategy and we've looked at the risks of how steadily the tenants. I think it was the meeting before last, wasn't it? And how confident are you that the current conditions that the people, the tenants we have in the properties we're leasing are stable tenants? Has anything changed recently?
No, there's been no material change in the financial health and stability of any tenants within the investment properties. That was part of the major focus of the analysis prior to actually acquiring them. So understanding their kind of financial health, the prospects and market, how shocks might affect them. Of course, COVID happened and nobody saw that coming, but we have not had to give any rent forgiveness or rent delays, or granting rent delays, if you like, through that process. So everybody's paid up on time and still financially solvent.
And what happens if a tenant gives notice that they need to leave? What happens then? What's the process in terms of... are they on fixed term contracts, or how much notice do they have to give?
With the investment properties, they'll all be longer term tenancies, so ranging anywhere from 7 years remaining to 20 years remaining, that perspective. They are legally bound to pay the rent in that period. If there is a break clause in the lease, it will specify a time period where they can signal their intent to leave. As part of a risk mitigation and management strategy of these, we created commercial property reserve. So we calculated the risk of any of these events happening when they happen in time, and the amount of risk that we face from a financial perspective, and we set that money aside every year. So at the moment, our commercialization reserve sits at about £600,000, and we add into that year on year as the risk increases. So it's not necessarily need to be there immediately. In the event that somebody became insolvent and the administrators were called in, at that particular point, we would secure the property, we'd levy a charge of the administrators, and we'd begin the process of trying to find a new tenant, all of that happening simultaneously. So whilst nothing's ever certain, we have enough liquid income in a dedicated reserve to cover any kind of unbudgeted revenue expenditures for the council, so services don't suffer.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick one from me. I know from other committees that I'm with, we have quite a few voids at the moment, and also quite a few age-limited properties. And I'm just wondering, is there an ongoing review to those? Because it would seem sensible, if we can't fill them, should we be maybe selling them and investing that money to generate more income through more sellable or rentable properties?
This commercialisation activity only reflects those properties held in the general fund and not the HRA. So the HRA is where the voids are held, and they are taking steps to go ahead and try and fill them. So it's not within the purview of this particular piece of work. In terms of our general fund commercial property portfolio, we have no voids. We are fully let at this particular point, and we'll stay with all that information.
For you, Chair. The point I'm making, I think, is as a general fund, if there's money there that we could have to reinvest in something that is more commercial, possibly more rentable, would it not make sense still to look at that as a potential income stream?
That's a great point. There are elements that have to happen if we were to do that. So, for example, we'd have to apply to the Secretary of State to release that property from the HRA into the general fund. Once we have that approval, the general fund would have to purchase that property at the market rate from the HRA, at which point then we would have a conversion process that would go beyond that. So if there ever is an instance whereby something is potentially profitable, there's a clear route through to actually achieve that. There are a number of steps we would maybe undertake. We need a very clear business case to warrant that type of action.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you, Chair. First of all, just congratulations on a very good report. You read very well, and commend you for doing what you've done so far. I think it's a long overdue addition to the council. The only thing I would like to raise on page 15, and it's one of the less glamorous things, I'm afraid, is regarding street cleaning grounds maintenance, reference to a similar company that we could possibly create to that of Rushcliffe Borough Council. now status as future action. Do you know what saving we could potentially make by bringing this back in-house? And if not known, when will this be reviewed? As it's just saying, I mean, it's a future action, that's all I've got to say. Thank you.
Certainly. The contracts for those services are currently contracted outside of the council, so either Vary Circuit or BBs for us. We would only be able to consider that at about 18 months to 2 years prior to ending that contract. We do not know yet what that would actually cost us. However, in terms of our cost structure, our cost base, we know that carrying employment of employees, our staff costs are probably 30 to 40% on top of base salary in local government terms, whereas in the private sector, you're talking 25, 27% on top of base costs, with pension contributions and the like. So it's significantly more expensive for us to go ahead and run those services just out of the gate. But that's not to say that we couldn't structure a service in a more innovative way, use less human resource, and perhaps more technology. But in any event, at this particular point, given where we're at and our current financial pressures, we'll probably take it through a competitive negotiation, tendering process, see if the market can go ahead and pick that up. I don't see at this particular point, with, again, all of the financial climate as it is, the lack of certainty around future funding, we would necessarily want to bring that back into house at the moment.
Can recommendation 14 regarding ties between the council and the university? There's two parts to that. The first one is, how satisfied are you that the business rates that we gain from the university is sufficient to make up the shortfall? Bear in mind that if you think about all the houses in multiple occupation that aren't paying any council tax, that if offsetting the balance, say if you didn't have a university town and those houses were paying council tax, how much more revenue we'd have. So how satisfied are you that we are receiving sufficient money from them? Because, for example, with the enterprise, the careers and enterprise sort, am I right in saying that it was Chalmers that paid for that rather than Loughborough College or Loughborough University? So it seems as if we're taking the financial pressure with very little insufficient return.
So to go directly to your second point, Councillor Parton, the Careers and Enterprise Hub was actually purchased with forward monies from the town deal that were provided to Charlottesville Council to kickstart the kind of town deal program or projects. The only instruction that we had from central government on that was, here's a pot of £750,000, make sure it's spent by the end of the financial year. The college had a project that was ready to go, it's Careers and Enterprise Hub. We used that money, which was an external source and on top of any other funding that we received, to go ahead and acquire that building. That is now a Charnwood Council owned asset. They do have a rent-free period for 3 years in order to help guarantee the success of that. However, they are covering all the costs of occupation, so they are paying full life business rates on that particular property, which then come back to council. In 3 years' time, they will be paying a commercial market rate for that property. We have no tenants, no commercial tenants that don't pay commercial rents, market rents, and they are obviously obligated under law and under the lease to go ahead and pay the associated rates. As to the comment about, or the question about HMOs, council tax, are we getting enough? Would we get more if we weren't a university town? Difficult to answer. No, I've never done that level of analysis. But in any event, there are significant other benefits to our area by having that, and of course the work that we've done with Lucet and the Enterprise Zone in terms of some investment funding that we've had, that those business cases do stack up. We do make a marginal return on our investment, either through business rate retention or repayment of any debt.
Oh, That was the that's what I was looking for. The fact that you're saying we are making a return.
Thank you, Chair. Concerned with a panel recommendation for which is on page 8, which is really about the prices charged for goods and services, and you know, whether they're appropriately priced. And it stated that fees and charges are reviewed annually and set appropriately. Well, of course, appropriate is really a policy decision. So I'm really interested in the criteria that defines appropriate, because, for example, appropriate could be we want prices to be as low as possible, which may risk subsidising them, or it can be we will be cost neutral, or it can be we will maximise revenue. So when you say the prices are reviewed annually, is the policy decision around what appropriate is also reviewed annually and something that is actually discussed with Cabinet?
That is correct. So as officers, we'll go through and understand exactly where our fees and charges sit. We understand where they sit relative to our nearest neighbours, if you like, say all the other district councils within Leicestershire, and determine if ours are on a par or appropriate. The councils across the country do this with their kind of nearest neighbours from that perspective. There is disparity amongst others, but there are certain fees and charges such as garden waste, which returns a margin, a net margin to the council from that. Of course, that's under threat by the Environment Bill, which is coming forward. But any of those recommendations are always a policy decision. So it's Cabinet that will go ahead and make the ultimate decision on where we actually set those at. As options, we'll set up a range of options. We'll try to understand what the price sensitivity of those items are, i.e. if we increase car parking charges, are we going to drive people away from the town centre? Are we going to drive into other competitors and lose income other that way? Will people stop paying for garden waste? Things of that nature. And of course, there's always a political influence on some of these decisions as well, which companies want there. But in terms of the analysis that officers are doing and presenting at that point, it's a case of showing them the options available of what we could do and trying to provide such information so that an appropriate decision can be taken.
And just a follow up is because of where we are. These days with concerns of income, is there now a move to maximise revenue where possible rather than just trying to be cost neutral as we might have been in the past?
There certainly is. Some of those actions we've taken, for example, the town hall, where we've looked at the drink provision for shows, so price of a pint, to speak in simple terms, and how we might be able to go ahead and deliver more income. Say by the bar during the show. We're also looking at the program shows, the types of acts we bring in, how many more seats we can sell. We started looking at selling space for wedding venues, things of this nature. So where we can reasonably and with fairly decent level of probability deliver an increased income by selling marginal services or marginal elements, we will. I think the And this was one of the great debates around commercialization of councils many years ago, was everybody thought that we could just go out and open up a widget factory and make money tomorrow, which is not necessarily the case. So again, the criteria that's referenced is one of the recommendations, I can't remember where it was, maybe 3 on page 7, sets out the kind of criteria that should kind of govern that decision. So very long answer to a very short question. Yes, where appropriate and where we can actually do that and undertake that without undertake that speed, the argument. So kind of those that require a political decision will be presented, discussed, and debated, and a position being taken.
Thank you, Justin. One more has just come to my mind. I think it's referring to something that Councillor Parton might have said earlier regarding security of tenures. Now, I used to work in this field not long ago, so I'm aware of how to do commercial leases and stuff. Just to ensure that the public purse, obviously, you know, kept in check and stuff, as well as other background checks, in the event that God, you know, unfortunately someone went under and stuff, are we at liberty to then potentially ensure that tenure, if it has to be broken off, can be, you know, quickly filled at some point? Is that, and also, are we outsourcing the legal advice, or are we doing it in-house as well? Thank you.
We outsource the legal advice, so I've engaged the services of commercial property lawyers at Benington to go ahead and do all of our legal due diligence in conjunction with the in-house legal team from perspective. But given the width and breadth of these transactions, the fact that we're dealing with millions of pounds in the transaction, we need to make sure that we have the best representation as possible. And not only that, of course, we engage external experts, surveyors, and whatnot to ensure that everything is as we think it is. In the event that a tenant becomes insolvent and the administrator is called in, we will obviously take steps to secure the property. Under law, we are able to secure assets on the property, the value of any outstanding debt, which we would do. And of course, we would engage the market again to go ahead and get that property turned around as quickly as possible. Whilst not at this council, but at a previous council, I had this very situation when coming to a pit. A large asset went into administration. Inside of 4 months, we secured the property, secured the assets, negotiated a new 25-year lease, and got new tenants in the property. So you can do these things very well if you have the right experts and the right mind to go ahead and do them. It's not unheard of that can be done. Would any of our property sit absent or sit vacant? No, we wouldn't allow it. We only have so much money set aside, so there would be a great pressure, shall we say, to go ahead and fill that, but not with any tenant, find the right kind of tenant. This is where engaging the market will help.
Back in about 2015, we held a scrutiny panel. It was a car parking scrutiny panel. I think it was 2015, might have been earlier. And one of the things that this panel in particular suggested was that we would investigate having car park town centre permits for the workers to stop them from trying to incentivise them to stop parking in side streets, which is difficult because it's all present parking zones. And this idea was met with quite a lot of officer opposition because of the lack of available car parking to do it. Now, obviously, this panel recommendation 13, if you look at the wording, it says that opportunities to improve and increase car parking. So if you look at that would suggest that what they're actually saying is, can we build another car park? Now, the response seems to say no without saying no. It's saying current options for change that are being evaluated across the borough are regarding fees and capacities. So how likely is it that we would look at securing some land to build another car park?
I wouldn't necessarily say that it's explicit that we said it would build a new car park. You can certainly interpret it that way, that's the part of it. If there was a business case which would actually support that and show that we could generate significant income by doing that, then it would certainly be investigated and pushed forward. The current evaluation is around levels of car parking charges and their effect on traffic. Other things being considered are the fact that we have other car parks like Russia's. The other shop that said the names.
Sainsbury's.
Sorry?
Sainsbury's?
Yeah. Several other car parking options are within the town centre. So within that, that's the consideration is at this point, how much do we charge? Are we maximising the charge without driving away traffic? And are the options for charging appropriate? So that's currently being considered.
Because we had a report written, didn't we? Before you would have started here. Have you seen that report that the council... Can anybody remember? There was a report that the council...
Is there a question?
Well, have we seen that there was considerable council money spent on hiring a consultant to do a big car parking study report?
I remember
so it's
quite hard to study other options car parks, but that's probably not relevant to well, it's not relevant to what we're looking at the moment. But you've read that in a completely different way than I've read it, and that's probably because I've read the budget papers and know how much we are losing because of car park charges or non-car park charges. That's the way I'm looking at that paragraph there. Is that right?
Yes, sure, that is correct. And in effect, we still have the latent effect of the pandemic in that the number of visitors to the town centre has returned to pre-pandemic level. So we are still short on our kind of normal levels of income, given virtue of the fact that fewer people are coming in this town than we saw.
And it is quite a lot of income as well, isn't it, that's not being gained from car parking charges.
So,
but you're fighting with football and charging. Yes,
could I make a recommendation that report be sought, because it was sanctioned by Childhood?
We could
look
up for it.
Thank you. As opposed to a recommendation, we can put in the notes of the meeting tonight that an action from it is that the Democratic Services Manager looks and researches that report, because I do know there was something probably 4 or 5 years ago at least. So if we do it as an action as opposed to a recommendation, would that be okay? Mm. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it was about 500 pages long, this report.
Thank you for that. I have got a comment, not a question. It's hindsight's a wonderful thing. And when you started on this, I'm not quite sure now. I think it was the beginning of the pandemic, wasn't it? That we all thought would last 6 weeks, and that was it. Have we done the right thing? Did we do the right thing then? Are you happy with that? And do you think in the long run we will be justified for going out to get commercial properties?
I am happy with it. It would have been better to be able to do more. In terms of proportionality and the ability of us to manage the risk and gain the reward, if you like, in the activity, we could have done significantly more. Not on the order of, as you might say, some of the more perhaps aggressive councils like yourself or others who were indebted to £1 billion into this type of activity. But certainly there was a larger quantum that we could have achieved before central government stopped it. However, what we have done, I'm very satisfied with in terms of the security, financial security of the tenants that we have, the income that it generates, and the way that through the pandemic, all of that income, all that rent continued to be paid. There were no requests for rent deferrals or anything of that nature. And the financial health every company's financial health has been impacted by the pandemic. Thankfully, with central government efforts, a lot of that was necessarily mitigated. And we're still in a position where we're able to safely rely on that. But of course, we put the risk mitigating strategies and actions into place behind that, so that if we have a blip, such as Councillor Poppy suggested, we can manage that and not affect service members or affect the public person.
I have noticed that the I can only remember the Oaks, but there's another industrial unit that we hold, isn't there?
The Oak and the Ark.
The Oak and the Ark. I remember the Oaks, I've been there. But they are not at 100% capacity. Is that something that you follow up on and is that part of the commercialisation that is?
So in terms of the asset portfolio, I split it into two types. The investment types, which are basically standalone, leave them alone, manage and watch them, and the commercial, which serve a much more local, more regenerative function than any of the asset ones. Some of the vacancies that we currently have are down to people giving up office space during the pandemic. Oh, we can all work from home, we don't need this anymore. But where we can. We have seen a significant increase in demand in those. I'm not sure of the actual current numbers, so I have to go ahead and give a double check, but I don't think we have a lot of units that are actually still vacant. We did when I first started, but those have filled up subsequently. People moving from larger office space into smaller office space, so they occupy a fairly decent office. And those are both office, service office properties rather than industrial units. Smaller, a smaller number of industrial units as such, and they're all fully let.
Thank you very much for presenting the report. Am I to close that now, or are there any questions that I need to make?
So if I can just come in, you've got a recommendation on page 3, and there are 3 options there, and I sense from the discussion this evening that you are satisfied that with each of the decisions of Cabinet that you are, you consider that they are sufficiently complete and no further monitoring is required. Would that be the sense of you've asked your questions this evening? I just wanted to get that clarified as a recommendation.
That would be my recommendation. About the committee, please. If it needs to come back, it needs to come back to a different committee. Probably more on the performance. Not necessarily at this committee.
Yeah, well, see,
it
was to say that we continue to monitor the income gained from car parking charges to see.
The commercialisation, yeah. So we've got that action.
Yeah.
So we'll be informed on that. So if the committee thought that we. Yeah? Do we need a second?
Yeah.
Do we need a second? Not. Or we need to be.
Yeah, I mean, everybody here for the recording, there is clearly a consensus in the room that everybody agrees that the it's now complete for each of those actions, those decisions, and no further monitoring is required. So, and that is a clear consensus. So thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much. Right, item 7, previous discussion, decision, scrutiny. Of any specific financial matters have to be considered by the Cabinet, and there is none. None have been identified. Cabinet items for pre-discussion scrutiny, there again, none. Then we've got pre-discussion scrutiny, Cabinet responses, and that's on page 12 of your agenda. And if I could ask Karen to introduce the report.
Thank you. So this is simply to note the responses to the recommendations submitted by the scrutiny by the Commission on items considered on the 15th of November 2021, which related to Charnwood grants round 2 and the introduction of revised licence conditions for permanent residential mobile home sites. And this is for noting. Thank you.
Thank you. So item 10 is progress with panel work, please. Page 14.
Thank you, Chair. So this report sets out progress with the scrutiny panels, so I will go through each one in succession. So first of all, the waste management scrutiny panel. That met for the first time on the 9th of November, and the report sets out and summarises the outcomes from that meeting, which I won't go through in detail. And that particular scrutiny panel is going to be meeting again on the 14th of December. The next one that relates to the budget scrutiny panel, that has not met since the last meeting of the Scrutiny Commission, but actually has a meeting coming up on the 8th of December. And the recommendations from the Budget Scrutiny Panel will be coming to the Scrutiny Commission in January. In terms of other updates, I'll go through the table now. So I've talked about waste management, budget scrutiny. The next one is concerning the digitalisation and transformation of services. Now, Councillor Brooks, I understand, has met with Carey Marshall, and they recently updated the scoping document, and it's due to be considered by the Scrutiny Commission in January for sign-off. Is that correct? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I've also got to ask the committee to approve the Combating Learning as a Scrutiny Panel scoping document that you have on your desk.
And if I can just add, Chair, that this is following a meeting that Councillor Part and myself and Verity Graham had a meeting recently. This is a scoping document that's been published this afternoon, and it's also on your desk. I do actually ask that we just have a slight amendment to it as well, please. In the resource requirements box near the end, it does say lead officer Julie Robinson and other managers that have oversight of community and neighbourhood policy. For reasons that this is an informal panel, so there is no resource requirements. So if we can actually delete reference to that in the resource requirements section. Obviously, the team will act as witnesses for gathering evidence, but they are not a resource requirement. So thank you.
So the scoping document is to consider how loneliness in the borough is currently being addressed and whether initiatives can be put into place. The reason for scrutiny is millions are experiencing loneliness in the UK, and this has been exacerbated by the pandemic. Whilst there is no statutory duty to deliver services to reduce loneliness, this is an area where the Borough Council can potentially influence and help the community. The membership of the group is Ted Parton, Chair, and who is the champion for loneliness reduction. And the committee members that will go out to invitation, will it, Ted?
Believe that Karen had said that she would be able to put the invitation out for people to join, but then that would be there would be clerk in the meetings.
You yourselves would be clerk in the
meetings. That's right, because it's an informal panel.
Yes, that's right. And so Democratic Services will assist you with asking for expressions of interest, so that we manage the membership carefully. Sometimes we get oversubscribed to the panels. And then once we have that membership, the suggestion is that the commencement of this scrutiny panel would be February
2022. Fantastic. Thank you. And Councillor Hamilton, I think I put him on the spot last time, and he's very kindly agreed to be chair of the AS Crime and ASB Scrutiny Panel. Is the committee in agreement with that? Thank you very much. Thank you. Right, scrutiny, thank you. I've got the name Colin. It's just gone then. Woman of a certain age, you think. Karen, if you'd like to introduce the report of our work programme, please.
Thank you. So the scrutiny work programme, this relates solely to the Finance and Performance Scrutiny Committee. That met on the 30th of November, and it's my understanding that no changes were made at that meeting. However, we do have the chair of that meeting, so he may be able to clarify if there were any changes, but I don't believe there were.
It was a discussion at this committee about the communities, whether it was sitting in the right committee or not. Mark took it over to his committee and they discussed. Mark will come.
Thank you, Chair. Yeah, we looked at the report and we felt that it was a performance issue, so it should still sit within the Performance and Finance Scrutiny Committee. And I think we're happy to keep it within our work plan.
But that does not mean that aspects of that can't come to this committee. It
to pull something out at any particular time. Right, so anything else?
No, so we could just note that item then, thank you.
Yes, please. A screening commission work programme is page 26.
So the chair, the scrutiny work programme or scrutiny commission work programme is set out, and I wasn't planning to go through it in any great detail, and we've also got forthcoming executive key decisions. So firstly, with the work programme, is there anything that needs to be added, deleted, moved? And then with the key decisions list, is there anything that members wish to pull out for free scrutiny?
At the moment, there's nothing that jumps out at me at all, but we will be having an email from Sally telling us of any forthcoming key decisions to be made. Unless you want to go down at page 2, page 2, oh, 33, and have a look in there. Obviously we're looking at anything that goes in the new year, so it won't be on page 33. These are 13th of January, but near as well, isn't it? How's 11 you'll go to you? Depends what there is, yeah. Depends if we dance the top or not. Okay. Certainly not looking at Charmwood Crumbs. But that's how we're going. Way ahead of ourselves now. But hopefully there'll be something in the key decisions. You have a look at those, and we'll probably call something from that time. Thank you very much. Right, so next meeting, 10th of January. Thank you very much for coming tonight. I've been let off on Thursday because we don't have to present anything to Cabinet. And all have a wonderful new year and be safe. I'm a bit disgusted when I go shopping now. There's nobody there anymore.